All right, I guess we've rounded up our quorum. Ready to take up once again our work on LD 1625. And I'm looking for Representative Bear. Representative Bear?
I haven't seen him.
So I did want to allow Representative Henry Bear to say a few words. He's not here yet. So let's begin with Deirdre walking us through the language of the department, and we can start trying to get closer to specifics.
Senator Johnson, Representative Kamiga, members of the committee, my name is Deirdre Gilbert, and I am the Director of State Marine Policy at the Department of Marine Resources. What Diane is distributing is the latest draft that we have developed to try to implement basically all the conversations that have occurred around the upcoming ELBER season to date. So this would actually replace the earlier version of 1625 that you saw printed and incorporates all of the relevant elements from that, in addition to, again, everything that we've talked about so far. And I would say that...
Just so I make sure I understand, does this incorporate the changes that we had...
does it incorporate kind of the changes that...
...reached some level of agreement on straw poll in the committee and sections that we were able to resolve in a previous work session?
Right, like... Striking section one, you were going to check on reciprocity.
Right.
Is it everything?
Yes, it is everything that Amy sent me for her notes. And then basically working off of that kind of bulleted framework that we distributed at the last work session. So everything that was proposed within that is captured in this.
Thank you.
Sure. All right. So the first new section, section one, this is what we have talked about, which would basically add to the commissioner's rulemaking authorities the ability to establish ELBER individual fishing quotas. So there's a basic ability to adopt rules to establish, implement, and administer a fishing quota, an individual fishing quota system, the purpose of which is to ensure that the annual landings don't exceed the overall annual quota established at ASMFC, and then the individuals licensed under the state license or any of the tribally authorized ELBER licenses would be provided authorization to take, possess, and sell a specific amount of ELBERs during a specific ELBER season by weight. And then this would just say that the rule would establish the formula that would be used to allocate the individual quotas and the date that the department would use to determine what that individual harvester's reported landings were. Part two deals with how we would deal with an overage if the individuals who are issued a state license, if they exceeded the overall quota allocated to them. As we had proposed, the number of pounds that that group of license holders exceeded the quota would be deducted from the following year. If the overage was more than the following year's quota, then you would just basically keep doing that until you had accounted for all of the overage. Obviously, for this coming ELBER season, we need to adopt it as emergency rules. And then Section 4 of the procedure, that is just standard language with regard to how rules are adopted.
Backing up just a second, I think you lost me on where you were on we just moved on to Section 2?
I'm sorry, subsection 2. Ahead. Subsection 2 of 6171.
Okay.
The overage. So knowing that you want to talk about the formula, do you want to do that in the context of this part of the conversation, or do you want me to walk through the whole bill and then talk about
it? I think
it
might be good for us to walk through this once, and then, I mean, just people put a note next to something you want to talk about, and we'll come back to it.
So, again, that's just setting up that basic authority. And then sections 2 through 6 are, those are the libel provisions that I mentioned had appeared in our enforcement bill, so we'd be proposing to move them into this vehicle alternatively. And mostly these are minor changes. The first one increases the value of the items for which you don't need to do a libel from $75 to $200, and that was just at the suggestion of patrol. I think it's been $75 for the past 20 years or so. So they had just suggested with, you know, inflation that that would be a reasonable increase. Section 3 is being amended so that the law only requires that we post the notice of libel, but in practice we have actually been mailing it to the person from whom the items were seized, and obviously that is a much more reasonable thing to do, so we were just proposing to actually put into law that we would mail that notice. Section 4 is the new section, and This is one of the substantive changes that I referred to this morning, and basically what this would allow is for patrol to sell an organism that was seized prior to being libeled, and then basically the money from that sale would be held by the department until the outcome of the libel was determined. If the department had improperly libeled something, the person who from whom the organisms were seized would get that money back. If we had been appropriate in our actions, then that money would go to the department. And so Sections 5 and Section 6 make those same changes. Section 7, I should say that this drafting was done, as has been talked about this morning, we were kind of doing our drafting concurrent with the conversations with the tribe. So this reflects kind of the agreement that we had come to prior to the advice of the AG's office. So one of the things that had been negotiated was that the Passamaquoddy tribe would be allowed to issue unlimited licenses, but they would be for DIPNET only. So that is how we drafted it. Once we did that and had the AG's office review it, we did get some feedback that that in and of itself is problematic. If they are the only group that is prohibited from using a FICE net, then that is also a constitutional consideration, because it would appear to be essentially racially based or based on their membership of that group, they can't use a FICE net, whereas everybody else is allowed to use a FICE net. But otherwise.
Great. So, do you have a remedy that you'd suggest? I mean, I think that, is there an issue with someone using a DIPNET if what they have is a license for FICNET? I think there is. And maybe what we should allow is for someone to, you know, voluntarily adopt such a change.
We would, I guess, at the end of the day, again, not knowing what the ultimate solution is going to be, I think the recommendation is just that no group should be prohibited from using a gear type, a particular gear type.
So you're suggesting that we strike the change from this section? I'm trying to understand what it is you're suggesting as you walk us through this.
Sure. I think my suggestion, it probably would depend on what the ultimate outcome is, and in terms of whether or not there's going to be a derby or a individual quota, there might be a consideration as to whether you want an unlimited number of FICE nets in a derby fishery. So if there's a couple
different... So this is something we'll need to revisit once you're through after we take your questions in other sections. All right, thank you. Moving on.
So Section 8 would be the new section that provides for an annual allocation of the overall ELVR quota to each federally recognized tribe in, by percentage. So obviously the reason for doing it by percentage is that the overall quota is expected to change from year to year. So if you put a fixed amount into statute, then each relative portion could potentially, you know, increase relative to the overall. So the Passamaquoddy, the proposed 1,600 pounds for the Passamaquoddy is about 14% of our target TAC of just over 11,000 pounds. And that would just need to be determined for each group based on whatever it is they will be allocated. And this also specifies the notion of the buffer, 10% buffer being not, you know, retained and not allocated in order to ensure that an overage does not occur. Subsection 2, that was my, again, like earlier in this conversation, that was my attempt to draft the compromise, half open fishery, half individual allocation for the Passamaquoddy.
As you're putting this before us now, based on the commission's comments, are you suggesting striking that?
That would be struck. So subsection 3 would become subsection 2, and the requirement would be for each group to allocate to each of their license holders a specific amount of their overall quota allocated to them, and then provide documentation of the department of that allocation for each individual license holder. So that's the same text for each of the tribes and nations. And then the department would not issue a transaction card to the harvesters with tribally issued licenses until we have that documentation. And then the overage language for subsection 5, it's the same language that would be used for the overall state quota, but applied to each tribe individually. Section 9 modifies some existing language that requires license holders to have their license in their possession. Last year, we added the photo identification for elver fishermen, and then this year they would have to have the transaction card in their possession as well. And all of these things need to be in their actual possession, so literally on their person and available for patrol to look at, or a dealer to look at. Section 10 creates a new suspension or revocation authority based on conviction of exceeding an individual or an elver individual fishing quota. So for the first offense, it would be a suspension for the following season. For the second offense, it would be a revocation, and that's in keeping with all of the other elver violations. Section 11, this would be a new process for suspending a dealer license for failing to report daily. You might remember that last year the new suspension authorities were created for violations of weekly and monthly reporting. So now, because of the need to monitor the overall quota and the swipe card system, the dealers would have to upload daily. And so we tried to build in some reasonable time frames similar to the weekly and monthly reporting. So there's a requirement or a time by which they must report. If they haven't reported as of that time, we call them, because that's obviously the quickest way to contact somebody. We can't put something into the mail. So we would call them and say, we don't have your reports. And if they haven't complied within an additional 24 hours, then at that point is when the department would serve a notice of suspension. This language is the same as what it is for those other suspensions. We'd have to tell them what they didn't report and then say, unless you give it to us with request a hearing or give it to us within the next 12 hours, then we would suspend the license. Later on, you'll see that what patrol would also do at that time is seize the swipe card reader. And probably practically speaking, that's more effectual than the license suspension at that time if they don't have the equipment that they need to do transactions, then that's the same as a license suspension or worse. Section 12, these are the revisions to the license required and licensed activity laws that we had proposed in the original bill. It adds to it the requirement to use the Elver transaction card so that somebody who is licensed may not sell or transfer Elvers without the card, without using the card. And it also specifies that you can't possess one of those cards unless you have a license. Section 14 brings us back to the 48-hour close period instead of the two 24-hour periods. I know the commissioner has mentioned that that's a compliance issue with ASMFC. Section 15 is another aspect of the commissioner's conversations with the Passamaquoddy tribe where we had agreed to a prohibition of the use of fike nets on the St. Croix River and its tributaries. We would have to define that a little bit more specifically in the regulation, but Section 16 provides that clarification around who may touch fike nets. This is the same language that's proposed in the original bill where we were saying that basically licensed fike net fishermen may assist other licensed fike net fishermen as long as the tag, the person to whom the tag has been issued is present and assisting. And then there's the medical exemption basically for everything except they can't retain the elvers that are caught in the net. Toward the end, I'll speak, I know there was a lot of talk about the helper provisions, and the commissioner had said at the time, we obviously don't have the time between now and March 22nd to create a new license category and actually implement a new license before the coming season, but we might be able to do that on some informal basis. We've had a lot of conversations with patrol subsequent to that and just a lot of concerns about how that would actually be enforced if a license holder, you know, fike net or dip net, could have unlimited people helping them that the department didn't know who they were and there was no record of that. And so we feel at this point in time that would be something that we could implement for the following Elver season, but we do have a lot of concerns about implementing it without a formal license structure. Section 17 goes back to the check-only language that you saw. The only thing I changed there is that we've had some conversation about situations where a dealer might want to purchase Elvers not under their dealer's license, but as a supplemental for another dealer, and we really want it to be clear who is purchasing the Elvers and who the landings will be reported under. It also creates confusion for the harvester if a dealer is buying under their business but using the check of another business. So we want to at least say, you know, that the check has to be under the name of the person who is purchasing the Elvers and whom the Elvers will be reported to the best of our ability. Section 18 that was in the original bill, that is making the assisting in the illegal harvest of Elvers a Class D crime instead of a civil violation. Again, that's the one violation that wasn't captured in last year's revisions because it was a new violation. Section 19, this creates the Elver individual fishing quota requirements. So an individual may not possess or sell Elvers in an amount that exceeds what they've been allocated for the fishing season. They can't keep fishing after they have met their quota. They have to remove their gear. If they are out kind of participating in the fishery, the Marine Patrol officer could seize their transaction card once they've reached that quota. Violation of this would be a Class D crime. And then this Section 4, pecuniary gain, that's what we had been calling restitution up until this point and got some advice that that's actually not, restitution isn't quite the right terminology in this case, but it's the concept that in addition to the fine for the violation, a license holder could be assessed a fine of at least the value of the elvers that they have taken and not to exceed twice the value of those elvers by the court, and then that money would go into the eel and elver management fund. There's two different ways that fine could be collected. One is through a court process, and that's kind of how I've drafted it. Alternatively, it could be done administratively, as our license suspensions are, and so if that's, I think there are pros and cons to doing it both ways, but I would say at this point in time, we don't have a strong recommendation one way or the other, so it could be drafted both ways. Section 20 slightly amends what we had proposed for the supplemental licenses for dealers beginning next year, in which those supplementals could be used for everything except to buy elvers. As we said at the public hearing, that was our main interest, is in preventing the purchasing transactions from taking place at any location other than the permanent facility. And then this creates the requirement that the dealers use the transaction card whenever they are purchasing or transferring elvers, and they can't purchase elvers from a harvester that doesn't have a department-issued swipe card. This creates their reporting time frame as well. So basically daily reporting by 2 p.m. for the prior day's activities. And if they have a correction to their data, they need to contact the department. If they fail to report or fail to report accurately and don't contact the department to request an extension, at that point, patrol could seize the equipment. They could also seize the equipment if they've asked for an extension and not been granted one. Subsection 10 regarding the purchase of elvers, that is what we're trying to do here is basically make it incumbent on the dealers and the supplemental license holders to always have a paper record that shows how many elvers they have, who they purchased them from, who they may have sold elvers to, so that what they have on paper whenever they are inspected by patrol matches what they have in their possession. And so they'd be able to show that both from their paper records, and then also potentially they could bring up the computer screen that shows their activities using the swipe card reader. And then if what they have for elvers doesn't match what they have for records, then those would be subject to seizure. Section 13 is just the requirement to keep records that's currently in rule, so we're proposing that for statute instead. And then the pecuniary gain language is the same thing, that it would apply to dealers as to harvesters. If they are purchasing elvers illegally, then they would be subject to paying back the value of those elvers if they were found guilty of doing that. So the things that have not been addressed here, like I said, we're proposing for 2014. That's the point in time when we would create the helper endorsement or whatever it ends up being called for fishermen with fike nets. We have placed some limitations on the supplemental licenses. We would just basically say that you couldn't assign a primary buyer permit to the supplemental licenses. And again, for the purpose of understanding what various dealers are doing, who is just doing dealer-to-dealer transactions within the state and who is actually exporting elvers, for 2014, we would potentially create a new export licenses for those dealers who actually take the elvers out of state.
All right. Before we get into questions on that, I know you jotted all your notes in the margins, right, on this? I'd like to, if we could take a quick break from that, and we'll come back to it. Recognize Chief Joseph Sakabasin. Want to say a few words? And Representative Baer, follow, please.
Thank you, Senator Johnson, Representative Kumega. My name is Joseph Sakabasin. I'm chief of the Passamaquoddy Tribe at Indian Township. Let me first begin with, you know, over the last 3 months or so, possibly longer, we've negotiated with the governor's office, with the commissioner, on a weekly basis. And I thought we had come to some agreements that were reasonable. we've conceded in some areas, and we've changed our management plan to reflect that. We've called meetings, you know, on 2-3 days notice to make some of these changes, because the Attorney General's office has identified some barriers that create some constitutional issues. So we're given a target, and we sit with the commissioner, and we come up with what we think is a reasonable solution to that, only to find out in the 11th hour that's not the case. So it's been incredibly frustrating trying to negotiate this issue and to come up with something that we think is fair for the tribe and every other fisherman. So, you know, as you know, we've been here for thousands of years. We've sustained our livelihoods on the coast. We'll continue to do that for as long as we're in this region, for as long as we're on this earth. We're raised to believe to always protect what it is that sustains our life, whether it's a fish, a moose, a bear, to always respect when you take a life, you always give something back and you never waste. And, you know, so I think those values are reflected in our management plan. We've set some internally our own laws that are much more restrictive than the state has. And the reason being is, you know, we fear that the resource may be depleted. And I say that not having the science to back that up, only that over the last couple of years there has been some talk that it could possibly be depleted. So we've tried to err on the side of caution and implement measures that would ensure that we don't overfish, that we don't have 30-foot nets blocking a third of the river, in some cases less, and making it difficult for, you know, a reasonable amount of eels to make it up above into the freshwater and grow into the adult stages. But having said that, all of that, you know, I don't believe, and, you know, of course, we've sat with our attorney, we've talked with other attorneys, and I can't find an attorney that comes up, and I mean no disrespect in any way to the AG's office, that these constitutional issues are valid. We believe that if someone were, anybody could challenge any law, but reasonably, and I'm not an attorney, would those challenges hold up? And our attorney presented that earlier, and I apologize if I'm repeating some of what he said, but this is something that is, fishing is a very, we believe, we have never negotiated our rights to fish. We've never given that right up. I know that you'll have an opinion from the AG's office that may differ from what I'm saying. You know, our rights to fish are very important to us, but we take that very seriously, and we believe we have a responsibility to protect any resource that we take, and that's end of the day most important. So I'd be happy to answer any questions if anybody has any, and I truly appreciate the opportunity to come up and speak.
You're welcome. I think you may have seen around the horseshoe that there's a good deal of frustration on this side too, trying to figure out the, you know, way to move forward. Other questions?
Thank you.